accession number 26848, reel 1.
Mr. Claude Broomfield, reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Broomfield?
I was born on the 1st of January 1925, and I was born in Liverpool. Actually, the place was called Fazakerley. A lot of people never heard of it. They think perhaps it's in India, but it isn't. It was Liverpool 10, and Aintree, where the Grand National course is, was Liverpool 8. So I was actually, as a kid, playing on the Grand National course. We lived in some cottages just beside it.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know, what your parents, what sort of a family you came from, what your parents
right.
did?
Dad was a male nurse, Mum was a nurse, that's how they met. He worked in Fazakerley Hospital, which is still there. And when I was first born, he had to live in the hospital. It was a condition of his job. And it was a long time before they could get a house where they could get together as a family. And they eventually got a council house. And for the up to about the age of 10, I lived in council houses.
Was it a happy childhood, would you say?
Yes, yes. Mum used to work for a doctor, part-time, and Dad was a scoutmaster, got a certificate for bravery, trying to rescue people from a burning house from Baden-Powell. He was a group scoutmaster. Mum was a cub mistress. He was also a first aider, both in the Red Cross and the St. John's. I sang with him in the choir. He was a Sunday school teacher. He was a voluntary probation officer. That's the sort of background. It was a pretty vigorous life. I went camping with the Scouts.
Tell me about your Boy Scouts activities. We're quite interested in the Boy Scouts.
Yes, well, you remember the time Baden-Powell had only started them not too long. You see, we're going back to 1925 when I was born, but as I say, the Scout movement was really in its infancy, was progressing. Dad was in it for quite a few number of years. I went camping because he used to take the Scouts camping, and the Scouts used to dress me as a kid. I was so young I couldn't dress myself, so that's my camping started at a very early age. And year after year, I used to go camping with the Scouts and the Cubs, of course.
And what kind of activities did you do with the Scouts or the Cubs? You know, I mean,
well, obviously, there'd be the chores around the campsite. We had to do our own cooking, washing the dishes. We used to go rambling. We'd have campfires, sing songs around the campfires, games.
What about back in Fazakerley? Did you have a Scout hut or...?
We actually had our meetings in the church hall. He was a group scoutmaster. He had two troops. One was in one church hall, one was in the other. And as a first aider, they used to practice bandaging me up in the front room, putting splints on me, giving me artificial respiration, all that sort of stuff. I was the dummy they worked on when he was teaching people their certificates for first aiding.
Some troops were quite military. You know, there was a definite military.
Well, we wore uniforms. We had a band. You know, trumpets, bugles, drums. I used to play the drums myself because they used to keep the drums in the front room, and I used to go in there and practice.
Was there much drill?
Not really. We'd form up on a Sunday for church parade. And we would march from the starting off point up the road and then into the church. But that was the only formal side of it. There was no real... Well, there was discipline when we were having our meetings. When my dad marked the register, he'd call out and he'd say, "Present, sir." We called him sir. And even me, when I had to say, "Present, sir," it was my dad. It sounded funny calling my dad sir, but... I was treated the same as everybody else.
Was it a religious household? I mean, he was a Sunday school teacher. I mean, on which religion was it?
Yes, it was religious, in as much that we went to church. Being a choir boy, I'd be there for morning service. I'd be in the afternoon at Sunday school and evensong.
Is this Church of England?
Church of England. And at one stage, Methodist. We had a Methodist vicar who became head of the Methodist Church. And I think he was well known. I think his name was the Reverend Sangster. I think you'll find that in the annals of the Methodist Church, he's one of the leading lights. And he was our vicar.
And what about your education?
I went to a council school, infants, and then on to the next stage, for exactly school, and then the one at Barlow's Lane. And they had a system in Liverpool there where you went and sat an 11 plus. And that was for entering into a grammar school. I went for the 11 plus, and you got what they called a recall. You went for an interview with the headmaster of the school you wanted to go to. And I actually was going to go to Allsops High School, and in between the time of being accepted to go there, my dad changed his address. He moved nearer to where he worked. He was a lab assistant in a TB clinic. And I then had to go to a grammar school nearer where we lived. If you want, I can tell you a little story.
Yeah.
Which I think might interest you. When I went and to the first interview with the headmaster of Allsops Grammar School, there was a chair by his desk, and he said, "Sit down." And I went to sit down in this chair, and obviously he wanted me to sit in another one. And I think I must have put him in a bad temper by, because he'd have other boys to interview. But one of the questions he asked me, and I've asked lots of other people, was, he said, "You've got a pond and there's a lily on it. And the next day there's two lilies. And each day it doubles up from 2 to 4 to 6 to 8. So each day the number of lilies is doubling. And one day the pond is full. When is it half full?" That is the exact question he asked me. And I said to him, "The day before." Which is the answer. I've asked a lot of people that question. By this time, the war's on. And I left school at 16 and a half. And I knew that at 18, I was going to be called up.
Well, I will come on. Now, at school, were you particularly academic, or were you interested in sport as well?
Yeah, I played football for the school, played cricket. Not for the school, but for the house team. But played football for the school. Played right back and right half back. I was a big lad, and I can remember on one occasion I did what David Beckham did. I scored a goal from the halfway line. The wind got behind the ball, it went in. It's just one of those things. Yes, I wasn't very good at sport, because I was all right at that particular thing, but I wasn't nimble. I was a bit on the fat side. So I wasn't a good runner, but I had plenty of beef, you know what I mean? And I wasn't an acrobat or anything like that.
Now, were you aware of the approach of war? I mean, I know you're only a young lad, 13 or so, but did you know what was going on in Germany? Did you have an opinion on Hitler, that kind of thing?
No, I wasn't au fait with the political situation. I wasn't really interested in politics. But when the war was declared on September the 3rd, 1939, I was actually on holiday in Wales with my mother and father. In those days, we didn't go on holiday on our own. We went with our parents. And I listened to the radio. We came back from the holiday on the Saturday. So I was home for the Sunday. And that was the Sunday when war was declared by Chamberlain. And I remember listening to the radio, And I chummed up with a chap while we were on holiday. We were on a farm in Wales. That was what the holiday was, a farm holiday. And there was a chappy there in the farmhouse with his wife. And I've got on very well with him. And I was due to go and see him on that Sunday morning because he was going to give me a camera. And I went round to his house, and I well remember it. He'd heard the broadcast about war being declared, and he was a married man in his early 20s sort of thing. And he said to his wife that he was going to go and join up. And to me, he was a hero. He was going straight away. I learned later that there was no chance of him going in the services because he'd only got one lung. He'd had trouble with TB. There was a lot of TB in the country at that time.
But what did you think when you heard about that? You'd be, 14? What did you think?
Well, what happened, there was a cinema. I lived at the particular time that it happened. I didn't live in Fazakerley. We'd moved to Waterloo and Blundell Sands, Liverpool. And a new cinema had opened just that particular week. And the order came from the government that there would be no public congregations of people, and the cinema was closed. And it was had a record. It was sort of more or less open and closed on the same day. And that was the local cinema in that particular area. The thing that probably would interest you as a schoolboy is that because the war was on, and I was still at school, we're having lessons in the playground. We had a long holiday when the war was declared, while they built air raid shelters in the playground of the school. And when the air raid sirens in Liverpool went, we would continue our lessons in the air raid shelters.
Now, what were these air raid shelters like at the school?
They were surface. They were sort of brick built with sandbags around them. And we would, when the air raid siren went, we would go actually into the air raid shelters, sit down on the seats, and the masters would come with us and the lesson would continue in the shelter. And in those days, we went to school on a Saturday morning as well in the grammar school, and we had a lot of homework. We had three subjects a night, so we had a lot of homework to get through. But the interesting thing I would like to tell you is that although I was a schoolboy, you may remember I told you I was a big lad, I was bigger than my dad, I joined the Home Guard. Now, the reason I joined the Home Guard was I was trying to look older and be Jack the Lad, if you like, because some of my friends were older than me, and some of them were going into the forces.
Now, which Home Guard did you join, and how did you get to...
Well, I joined the Home Guard in Blundell Sands, and I joined with a pal of mine. And the reason I left the Home Guard is because they wouldn't give me a greatcoat. I'd got the denim uniform, but for some reason I couldn't get a greatcoat. And they wanted me to do guard duties on the beach. We live not far from the beach at Waterloo, along the River Mersey. And they mounted guards on the beach through the night. And although I was a schoolboy, they didn't know I was a schoolboy. I told them the wrong age. They wanted me to go on guard, and I said, well, I'm not going on guard on the beach unless I get a greatcoat. And I didn't go on guard on the beach, and I was pretty disappointed with their attitude to me. Mostly they were older people than me. And after some time, an officer from the Home Guard came and knocked on the door where I lived and read the riot act to me, saying that I was being dishonourably discharged from the Home Guard, and I laughed. And I said to him, you can't dishonourably discharge me. He said, why not? And I said, well, simply because I'm underage. I'm still at the grammar school. I'm not working. You know, I'm only 16. I should have been 18, but I looked 18, but I was only 16, so that was the end of that. Anyway, I joined the first aid, the local first aid.
What training had you actually done with the Home Guard? I mean, how long had you lasted with them? What had you actually done while you were
with them? I can't remember how many. I didn't last a year. A matter of months, perhaps 6 months, something like
that. And that'd be in 1940 to 41 then?
Yep. And then when I came out of the Home Guard, I joined my dad in a local first aid detachment. Dad was in charge of them, and he was an instructor, because bear in mind he'd been a first aid all his life. And when the war came, he became assistant commandant of the Red Cross in Lancashire. And I was in his detachment between Waterloo, and I would do night duty, to attend to people who were injured in the air raids and things. And from there, I went into the forces when I was called up.
Now, tell me more about what you were doing with the first aid detachment. What training did you have? What your dad had given you?
Well, yes, and I went on training courses with the men. The training was geared to dealing with air raid casualties, gas and things like that, which we didn't have in the ordinary first aid training. And I enjoyed that because there was a good social life. While we were on duty, we would play billiards and table tennis and stuff like that while we were waiting, against the call to go out and do something when the air raid was on.
Now, do you remember any of the time you went out, when you were out on call?
I can remember when there was some bombing going on, and I was round by the local library when that caught fire. I can remember going in an ambulance once with a pregnant woman to hospital. Our own house was bombed. We had to leave the house and go.
Let's talk about the what about your air raid precautions in your house? What did you have?
We had an Anderson shelter.
Tell me about that. Who put it in and what was it like?
We didn't build it. It must have been somebody from the council, I should think. It was in the middle of the garden with steps leading down. And my dad didn't live far away from where he worked. And he worked in a big house which had been taken over. It was in a detached house in its own grounds. And that was the local tuberculosis clinic for the area. And he was caretaker and laboratory assistant at that particular place, and he used to do fire watching, and I used to do fire watching with him. And I also did fire watching when I first went out to work. I worked for an insurance company, did fire watching there. This is all between leaving school and going in the Navy.
I'll come to these points. What was the Anderson shelter like?
The Anderson shelter was steel, galvanized steel. Sheets bolted together and concreted over and sandbags around the entrance.
What was it like in there? What was
it was dry. Some of them were wet, but ours was dry because they were sunk in the ground, and it depended on the water level. If you went down, you would come to water, wouldn't you? But ours was dry because the water level wasn't necessarily high at that particular point.
And what furniture would you have in there?
There weren't chairs as such. I think Dad must have made some benches, and we were benches that we could sit on or sleep on.
And would you use it much?
Well, yes and no. My mother and my sister used it each time there was an air raid, but I got fed up going in and out the shelter, and quite often, I wouldn't go in there. I would stay in bed while the air raid was going on. So much so that when the house was bombed...
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Now, what about... did you have a blackout? Can you tell us about the blackout?
Yes, definitely had blackouts. Yes, definitely had blackouts.
Now, how did you black out the curtains in your... You know, so there's no...
Well, they must have... We had black sort of material... Presumably, I don't know where it came from. My mother must have made these dense black curtains, which we used to pull down, and that would shut out all light that was, to be shown.
And what was it like when you were outside in the blackout?
Dark, dark. I can remember I actually didn't have a steel helmet, and I used to walk around during an air raid with my friends. See, I was in my teens during those first air raids, and we could hear the shrapnel from the guns hitting the roofs. And it never occurred to me that a bit of shrapnel could have hit me on the head. Next morning, we'd go around picking up the shrapnel. We had the air raids while I was a schoolboy, and then in my early years of working.
Now, tell me about the air raids, then. What were they like?
Well,
you were in Waterloo.
Yeah. I'll tell you several little stories about the air raids. I was standing at our garden gate watching the searchlights and seeing the planes in the searchlights, and we had balloon barrage there. And of course they had these AK-AK guns, mobiles, sometimes at the end of the road, and when they fired they made a hell of a bang. And I was watching the aircraft guns firing and watching the planes, and I heard a whistling sound, and I knew that I couldn't get from where I was to the air raid shelter. I was at the front of the house and the air raid shelter was at the back. And I heard this whistling noise, and to me it was a bomb coming down, and or a shell. And it hit the house opposite, hit the back. We had air raid wardens, of course, and when there was a sort of a lull from the firing, etc., my dad, by that time, had arrived. He'd been fire-watching on his own. He'd come home, and we went round to the back of this house opposite, and there were two old ladies who lived together, and they were covered in white dust from the plaster ceiling. They looked like a couple of white ghosts. And they weren't really hurt. They're just shocked. And we looked after them, gave them a cup of tea, etc. And they had to vacate the house because the house was dangerous at the back. And it was put down to an unexploded shell from our own guns that had caused the trouble. When some months later builders came to repair the house, it wasn't a shell from our own guns, it was an unexploded bomb. So we had to evacuate the area, and the bomb disposal people came and they defused this bomb, and they took it round our estate on a lorry. It was a big thing, about a 1,000-pounder, and we got a collection for the soldiers that had defused it. And if it had gone off, I wouldn't be telling you this story. I'd have been blown to pieces. That's an absolutely true story. I did a very silly thing, I suppose, but when I knew and was told what it was by the builders and we were being evacuated, I went around the back of this house and saw the fin sticking out the hole they'd dug. I shouldn't have done that. I should have gone with everybody to be evacuated, but I was too nosy.
Any other stories of the Blitz?
Yes. We had a big matchmaking firm in Liverpool called Bryant and Mays, and there was thousands of logs there for making matches. And the Germans, because they were down by the docks, and we lived not far from the docks, so night after night the docks were being bombed. And these logs caught light, the bonfire there was alight day and night for a week or more. And I went down of an evening with some of my friends, about 17 or 18 years of age, to see the fireworks, as we call it, knowing full well that the planes would be coming and dropping their bombs on the bonfire. And we went deliberately to the area. Silly, but that is what we did. It was exciting, you see. It was a spectacle, something to see. And we went and saw it. And, of course, what we used to do if an air raid started, we would dive into the nearest air raid shelter wherever we were. I saw tram cars set alight with incendiaries. We had incendiaries in our own garden and the house next door, which we put out with bits and pieces. So, yes, it was a baptism of fire.
Your house being hit or the fire watching?
The fire watching came first.
Now, tell me about fire watching.
Well, with the fire watching, it was actually at the tuberculosis clinic, this big detached building. And we had a bed up on the top floor, and we could go out on the roof, and it was a vantage point, you see. So we could, if we saw any fires and things, we could go to it because it was a vantage point. And of course, he was also looking after that particular building. And when incendiary bombs dropped there, Dad actually put some of these incendiary bombs out.
Using what?
Sand and water. We had stirrup pumps and things like that. Mainly sand. Because the trouble with the... They were made of magnesium, and they were difficult to put out. And if you put sand on and smothered them, that was about the only way you could stop them. But it stopped the building from going altogether. Same as in the houses. So if you get at them quick enough, you stop them. Otherwise the house would go up, you see. Things like that. Anything else about the Blitz?
Well, your own house being hit.
Oh, yes. It was that was when I was in bed. And I remember quite vividly several things about the actual time. Mum was shouting from the shelter, come out, come out, come out, you see. I was in bed on the first floor, and as I say, the ceiling came down on me, and I got out on the end, because all debris all over my bedroom floor. I was in the dark, blackout and all the rest of it, and I was in my pyjamas. And when I went downstairs into the living room, everything was all debris and stuff. We had a budgerigar or a canary, I can't remember which, but we had a bird in a cage, and the cage was all squashed, and it was my mum's pet. Anyway, in the daylight after the night of the raid, we found the bird in the cage, and he was completely unharmed, but the cage was really squashed quite badly, and the bird survived. But the thing also that I remember was that when I got out of bed, this must have been shock, I couldn't stand up on my legs. They'd gone to jelly, literally gone to jelly. They wouldn't support my weight, and that must have been shock. But they quickly recovered, and I was able to get downstairs. And I can well remember going downstairs, getting towards the air raid shelter, I trod on either margarine or butter and squashed it flat in the debris. Because I went down in the dark, you see. So that was what actually happened. And then the next morning, we had to get our bits and pieces. And the landlord, it was a private landlord, he had a house, and he gave us the key to a house which was not damaged on the estate. And we moved from that house to the house that was not damaged.
Now, how much damage had been done to your old house?
Roof, practically non-existent.
The bomb had actually hit the house or landed next
to it? No, it was blast.
How far away was the hit?
The hit was in the next road. One of my friends, a chap called Noel Bokes. Noel, he was born on Christmas Day. That's where his name came, Noel Bokes. His mother and father were killed, and he became an orphan. It was a landmine, and these came down on parachutes, a big one, and it damaged quite a big area of houses, flattened them. And with the others, it was the blast that did a lot of damage. Windows blown out, roofs taken off, that kind of thing. Uninhabitable because of the damage.
Did it affect your nerve at all after that? I mean, I know you'd had shaky legs, that's just immediate shock, but afterwards, did you get back to how you were?
In all fairness, Peter, I don't remember being frightened.
So it didn't make your nerves worse?
The